the whole truth is that National Socialism stand way above the old left and right wing scale. We are not right wing. We are not left wing. We are the people's wing. We are not loyal to any class or special interest in society. We oppose both communism and capitalism and fight with every mean possible for our nation's sake. We are loyal to our race and we are loyal to nature. Both things that stands way above left-wing communist splitting and right-wing capitalist enslaving.
Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective. This is the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement, in which Simon Lindberg, the movement's leader, voices the organization's positions and thoughts. This is episode number 14. My name is Fredrik Weideland, and with me I have the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg. Hello and how are you doing?
Hello, hello. I am quite fine. I have had a bit of a cold in the last couple of days. Not that severe, but maybe it is some multiple corona or something. I have no idea. But yeah, not worse than a little bit of headache. And yeah, my nose is running a bit, but not worse than that.
Yeah, you should take the vaccine.
Yeah, I will run down to wherever you can get it, I guess. Outside of my grocery store, they had some bus where you could take the vaccine. So yeah, I guess it's not that hard to get my hands on if I want it.
Yes, I'm good myself, and I was a little bit tired this morning actually, but now in the evening when we record, it's just fine with me. I have been out hiking this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, should I tell a little bit about it, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely, please do.
Yeah, so this weekend I've been hiking together with Nest 2 in Sweden, and we have decided to hike the Bohusleden during this year, which is a trail that runs from Gothenburg to the Norwegian border, a distance of 370 kilometers. And this weekend stage was 19 kilometers, which we walked on a full day on Saturday. We have previously talked about the need for hiking for a fighting organization, but in short, hiking is important for building the group, challenging the group and yourself, learning the survival skills and so on. Most important probably to build a group, as the group in the political struggle must withstand great external pressure and therefore must be welded together, unite the front, so to say. So the Nordic Resistance Movement are big fans of hiking, and we're also quite good at it.
Yeah, and I would like to add that it's actually also a spiritual point with being out in the wilderness and embracing nature and seeing our beautiful land with your real eyes and in real life. I guess that also makes you a stronger fighter and a better fighter, and because you see what we fight for, And you also get strengthened by nice clean air and so on. So that was just another benefit with these kind of activities.
Yeah, and on this stage that we walked this Saturday, it was a great nature. And it's spring, and the flowers blossom, and it was a lot of rivers there, and beautiful landscape. And you have the fire, and you have the comrades. Very good.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah, and like you know, but maybe not all the listeners know, it's not just my nest that carry out hikes on a regular basis, but it is something that happens all over the Nordic region within our organization. Just wanted to add that. And like I said, we are very good at it, actually.
Mm.
And another thing I want to highlight here is that hiking or nature stays are excellent opportunities to engage family members or family members of the organization. So during this weekend's hike and during some stages we hiked earlier, we bring our kids. And during this hike, there were 5 children aged 6 to 11. Children as young as 6 years old who walked almost 20 kilometers. Think about it. Those kids deserve a medal, I think.
It's very impressive, actually. It's many, many adult people today that wouldn't do that reach, I guess. Or at least not without a great amount of complaining and how hurt they are and everything.
Yeah.
But did they manage it good? And how was it with complaints?
Yeah, it was some whining, but not that much at all, actually. And it was in two-thirds of the stage, perhaps. So we talked to the kids, saying that... Well, you shouldn't complain because others have a tough time as well, and you just bring negatives to the group. So be quiet and walk, and they listen to it and march on. So, but as I said, a bit whining, but they were glad to be there, very glad and very proud afterwards.
They should be, and also. What they maybe not know themselves, but that they will bear with this the rest of their lives with them, and that it will strengthen them from now on and in the future. This will affect their whole view on being out in the nature, and very positive, I think.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And there are a lot of activities where you can bring and also activate the family and your children. Social events, you can conduct martial arts training where you perhaps divide into different groups, one for a hardcore activist and others for beginners and kids. We work a lot in this way, and we do it for several reasons. I've been a part of this struggle for 20 years, and I've seen people come and go. And if there is one thing I have learned, and too, Limba, you've also been a part of this, and see, you have seen what I've seen also. So things we learn is that it is important that one's family become part of the organization in some way. Because a hardcore activist will eventually also have children, and he should have children, as this is also a part of the racial struggle. The only ones who should not have children are those who intend to do something very radical, but then they should actually do it and not just talk about it. An activist will have children. And here it is important that the organization becomes like a clan for the family. Otherwise, there will be wear and tear. The man, as it usually is, spends all his time and energy on the struggle, while the children, kids, wonder why dad is never home. The mom or the wife to the male member gets angry and finally gives an ultimatum to her man, which too often leads to the man finally drop out the organization. I have seen this many times over the years, and this is unnecessary. And I think we need to think long term on this issue and create the right kind of structure to keep families within the organization. So my advice to everyone out there who fights in the same way as the Nordic Resistance Movement does is that you should make your organization a form of clan for your family. Engage your family in the clan. This does not mean that the wife or children need to be active on a continuous basis, but it does mean that you can create forms to bring families to activities. It can be forest excursions, martial arts, cultural things such as dance, children's choirs that performs at meetings, or whatever you want. It can also be about the clan protecting the family if something happens. That the clan helps in the raising of the children, so that they get better conditions, that they get in the surrounding decadent society. And when we succeed in this, we will keep activists within the organization. We will make sure that our families are kept together and also make sure to create tomorrow's fighters. Because these kids that we talked about earlier, some of them, perhaps everyone, I don't know, will be a member of the organizations and fighters tomorrow, I think, because they already know the comrades within the organization. They know that they are good men and women who take care of them, raise them in some sorts, anyway. So they will be tomorrow fighters. So, yes, that was what I wanted to say. Do Simon Lindberg have something more to say about this? Do you bring your own children?
Yeah, yes, I have done so during the past when it's suitable. However, also, even if these kids do not join us, you said maybe, of course, but I do not think that all of them will join us, actually. But some of them will probably. And what is for all of them is at least that they will, during the rest of their life, they will have a totally different view on Nazis and our organizations than other people that do not take part of this things will have. Because, as you say, they will see how people within the organization work and they will have good memories from that. So, I mean, the most important propaganda tool the system uses against us is this propaganda picture of that we are being evil monsters. And at least they know that whatever the system says to them, they have first-hand notice on that we are not evil monsters, and that they will bring on and remember for the rest of their lives. So it will definitely affect them in a positive way. And this actually, I will also make an add on that this does not has anything to do with politics or ideology, because of course we do not brainwash the children that are there. It's not like we're talking politics with them all the time and that they are being put into special lectures or whatever, study circles or something. It's not like that. It's just that they participate in these social gatherings, and by seeing that our activists are good persons, then that is the propaganda that they will bring with them for the rest of their lives. And that is enough. I think, or I know, that thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of Nordic people around the Nordic countries would join us immediately if they would have not had this propaganda picture of us being evil in their heads. So, yes, definitely it will make the chance of them joining and taking part in the struggle much, much bigger, at least.
Yeah, maybe we should bring all the whole people with
yeah,
who are hiking. But like you said before, and I think that that's a majority of the normies today, they cannot do this. They cannot walk 20 kilometers, I think.
Hmm.
And they would whine a lot more than those kids also.
Probably. Yeah, I have add-on also on the thing you talked about with the ultimatum. And yes, I've seen this many more times than that I wanted, just like you say, where good activists, they leave because they get this ultimatum from their girlfriends or wives. But I just also want to add that, of course, what you say is a good solution for the ultimatum to never happen, but if the ultimatum is there anyway, or if you have not followed Vedland's advices and brought your family, then it is a very, very short but important lesson. Never give in to ultimatums, whoever they come from. If they come from work, if they come from Reds terrorists, if they come from your wife. Because giving in to ultimatums is just showing your weakness, and this weakness will be used against you in the future. So, for example, in the case of a wife, if you give in to ultimatums put by your wife, yeah, then she will continue to give new ultimatums. And if you leave the struggle, she will feel that she has the upper hand. And this is not because she's evil of any kind. This is just nature, how it works, how her mind works. So a man that gives in to ultimatums, probably it's not a relationship worth saving at all, because it will she will leave you sooner or later anyway, because she will see you as a weak beta male instead of the manly man she married or got into a relationship with. So never, ever give in to ultimatums. Take that as a big and important lesson.
Today's lesson, never be a cuck.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, we will move on to the next segment. What has happened in the struggle since the last episode? This being late February till now in the end of April. So what has happened?
Yeah, during this period, somewhere between 300 to 400 activities has been carried out throughout the Nordic region. Flyers, posters, martial arts, lectures, wilderness activities like you talked about, and more of the spectacular laser activism that we addressed in the last episode. Just to mention some of the things in this fauna of activities that we carry out. And as usually, some actions have stood out more than others. And as equally usual, I will focus on some of those more interesting ones in this report. However, I will start with a follow-up from last episode where you, Vedland, in your introduction, talked about the trial with Swedish Academy, or Svenska Akademin, as it is in Swedish. The Nordic Resistance Movement and the newspaper Nordfront was sued by the authority Svenska Akademin for quoting dead nationalist Swedish authors. Svenska Akademin claimed to own these quotes and sued each of these associations, Nordic Resistance Movement and Nordfront, for 1 million Swedish crowns each, meaning around 100,000 euros or $120,000. However, I am very pleased to inform everyone that don't already know it that we won the trial. So now instead, Svenska Akademin had to pay our lawyer over 1 million Swedish crowns in fee, and also we can continue to quote whoever we want. So this was a big victory for our movement, and also it was a big victory for freedom of speech in Sweden. A victory that was made possible because we stood up and took the fight instead of giving to their threats. Because we didn't take their ultimatum. We weren't cocks. We stood up and fought instead. So, yeah, since this was your topic, introduction topic in last show, and you also participated at the trial, Vaidland, maybe you have something to add regarding all of this.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad that you brought this up, because I was going to bring this up in the introduction instead of talking about hiking and stuff like that. But then it came to me that I've been talking about legal cases in some of the last episodes of Leadership Perspective. So I wanted to talk about something else. So yes, it was a good victory, and I was a part in this case. Like you said, I was a witness. Our lawyer brought me up in the stand. And yes, a good victory, like I said. And like I said before, we have been, later years, I think, better, much better in legal cases. And we won the Gothenburg trials the end of last year. And in that case, the system tried to prevent us from demonstrating, actually. So, meaning that if we were just turn up on the streets, we are promoting racial hatred, and that is a crime. So, but we won that case also, and we won this, and we will continue to win. We are good at these legal cases nowadays.
Yeah. I continue with my report and come to the more ordinary but still outstanding and good activism then. And this part I would like to begin in Denmark, actually, where a winter help activity was carried out in the city of Odense, where our activists handed out clothes and food to homeless Danes. And this activity went really well and was very, very good carried out. And yeah, once again, I am very, very impressed with our Danish comrades when it comes to these activities. They do them very, very well. And in Denmark, there has also been two other activities worthy of mention during the month. On the Jewish Pesach holiday, dolls of murdered babies were placed outside of Jewish locations to symbolize the murder of all firstborn children that the Jews actually celebrate during Pesach. And a similar activity was also carried out in front of the synagogue in Norrköping, Sweden, actually.
What is it about celebrating mass murder? You also have the Purim, Jewish holiday, celebrating a massacre of 70,000 persons.
Yeah. And during Purim, they eat cookies that looks like human ears. And on Pesach, according to old tradition, beliefs that the Jews now claim is myths and lies, but it's well documented, you should use human blood in the bread that you eat, a special kind of bread that you eat. Yeah, they have some, at least say, macabre things yeah. For themselves.
How do they get the blood?
No idea, but I have a theory of they have been accused of a lot of kidnapping children from other peoples during history, so maybe there is a connection. But, of course, I'm not stating this as a fact, because I think that might be hate speech to do so. But I'm just theorizing among different historical myths. In Denmark, at least, this activity caused media havoc. And the representatives of the state, they also promised to put more resources to protect Jewish locations so the Jews can feel safe in Denmark. So more of Danish taxpayers' money will be put to Jews, in other words. Congratulations to the Danes.
Yeah, that's good, because the Danish people will see where their taxpayers' tax money goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Do not put more tax money into protecting the Danes that or falling victims for foreigners' violence or stuff like that, but protect the Jews because, yeah, some put dolls outside of their buildings.
Yeah. And that was the bad part, the evil part, not that they celebrate a mass murder of children.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, and then the third activity that stand out from Denmark during this time period was an activity that actually was first carried out in Norway. So they are actually the ones that should have credit for this and not the Danes, but they get a little bit each then. And that was posters that were put up with the text below Nordic standard and a sad smiley face. And these posters were put up on foreign-owned restaurants in several cities in both Norway and Denmark. And this poster, it was a copy of the one, the official ones put up by healthcare service in Norway, but with their symbol exchanged for the Tivas room. So, yeah, these posters were a way to say to the Danes and the Norwegians that instead of supporting Arabs and eating some halal kebab, they should support Nordic workers and eat Nordic food. Yeah, a funny and creative propaganda stunt, I think. And it also actually reached a lot of coverage in established media and also made some Arabs to speak out that they think it's only Jews that get protection and that it's only the Jews that it's you should feel so bad about for hate speech. But the Arabs, they don't get any of this cake. So, yeah. That was a funny plus effect that it stirred up some attention towards the Jews as well and how they react to all kind of horrible hate that are put towards them.
Yeah.
Then, of course, there has been several public leaflet actions and even more so public banner activities in all Nordic countries. But except for this, in Sweden, there has also been square meetings with speeches on three different occasions. One in Nyköping outside of Stockholm, one in Skellefteå in the northern part of Sweden, and the definitely most successful one in the small town of Vetlanda. In the city center of Vetlanda, a Afghani man went amok and stabbed several people on random in the middle of the day. And the same week as this attack occurred, our activists were on the same spot as this Afghani man went amok and gave a speech and handing out special flyers that handled the topic of anti-Nordic violence and that the peoples that do not fight multiculturalism actually accepts this to happen time after time. And also after the square meeting, the city of Vetlanda and also nearby cities have been visited several times by our activists with the same flyer. And these activities have given a lot of publicity and also many persons expressing their sympathy towards the Nordic resistance movement. And in many ways, this activity in Vetlanda, at least in my book, was a perfect example of how we would like to work all the time. That we are able to be in public on streets and squares with tailor-made flyers and speeches immediately after something that raises the people's awareness have happened. So, yeah, all thumbs up to our activists in Nest 7 and Vetlanda for the great work.
Yes, and I think in the earlier days, maybe we could gather all the organization, every member from all the country or countries, a month or several months later, perhaps. But this is only Nest 7 that brought their own guys to the square and held a speech, I think, 2 days after or something, maybe?
Yeah.
Shortly after, anyway.
Yeah, I must actually correct you. I think there was a couple of guys from Nest 3, the neighboring Nest at least, also, just to make that clear. But mostly yeah, guys okay. from Nest 7 itself, yes. So yeah, that's very good. And by the way, I also published an article on this subject that I know have been translated to English on NordicResistanceMovement.org. So we put in a link to that, as usual. And more than... during the period, there has been more martial arts than usual, I would say. Or maybe the amount of martial arts now being conducted is the new usual, maybe. But the trainings have included two bigger events containing sparring and a different form of physical exercise. And sparring is a very good way to keep our activists on their toes and prepare themselves for reality. You learn much about yourself when you see that you survive some punches, I would say. So that is very good that we are being better and better to doing this martial art trainings on a regular basis. And then also there has been social gatherings with celebration of both Eastern and of course the 20th of April, and these celebrations has been made all over the north. And traditionally we held a memorial activity on the grave of the fallen soldier Gösta Hallberg Kyla. He was active National Socialist and fell fighting communism during the Second World War in the front. So we usually do remember him and make some kind of ceremony around his grave, and so we also did this year. It's important to remember the fallen in the fight for the living.
Yeah.
And last but not least, I also want to mention that I participated in a podcast conference about the situation in Syria, together with, among others, the British nationalist Mark Collett and a high-ranked member of the Syrian Socialist Nationalist Movement. And this is in English, and for those who missed it and are interested to hear what we had to say, we will publish a link to the podcast in the description of this episode. But there I have covered the most important and interesting things. So I think I'll settle there.
Yeah, and this part, they are within the government, I think.
Yes, and they are. They are, yes.
The second biggest party after the Assad's party.
Mm.
And they also been conducting actually military fighting.
Mm. Fighting ISIS.
Against ISIS. Yeah. Yes. So check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we will move on to the ideological tactical question. And since this episode will be published same week as the workers' holiday on the 1st of May, I thought we would talk about workers' issues in this episode. The Nordic resistance movement is known around the world, I think, for its uniformed demonstrations during the 1st of May, where we clearly claim that we are a workers' party. So we start by sorting out the concepts. What do we mean by the concept of workers, and what does it mean to be a workers' party?
Yeah, it's good to clarify these things, because we have a very different view on workers than the Reds. A worker to us is every employee that produces to the commonwealth and society. And this, of course, means that carpenters, industrial workers, farmers, and mechanics are workers, but also that doctors, engineers, teachers, and military personnel are equally workers. And even if you own your own company, I would see you as a worker as long as you still are one of the guys on the floor, as long as you still are conducting the work, so to say. But with our view on it, you can own a company, being a bourgeoisie to the Reds, but still being a worker in our view. So a worker has a very much deeper and broader meaning to us than to the left wing. And this view, of course, goes hand in hand with our concept of Volkgemeinschaft. And as we said before, in the past in this episode, there is no good translation word for Volkgemeinschaft, so that's why I'm using the German word. But we want all of the people to unite in Volkgemeinschaft and work together for the nation's sake as a whole to make it the best it could possibly become. With this goal, there is no need to differ the different kind of workers from each other. There is no need to split the workers, to split the people. Blue-collar workers are worthless without white-collar workers, and vice versa. Workers of both hand and mind are equally necessary in order to create a great civilization. They complete each other as pieces in the puzzle, just like men and women does. And with this being said, the meaning of being a workers' party is to take care and look out for the workers, all the workers, yes, the people as a whole. National socialism is the only realistic ideology that stands against the big finance and for the ordinary working people. People in our nation, they would be allowed to get rich, but not unnecessary rich, and more important, not on the cost of the people as a whole. And in all possible questions, we will make sure to take the best decisions that will benefit our people the most in a term of 1,000 years to come, to benefit the workers.
Even if you have mentioned it a little already, how do we differ from the social democrats and the communists, who also see themselves as representing the workers themselves?
The red ideologies, they want to split up the people. They want to having the poorer workers to fight the richer workers. Or as they see it, the workers fighting the one that owns the companies, the one that has a higher salary and so on. And this is, of course, the opposite of our ideals of Volkgemeinschaft, there we, as said, instead wants to unite the workers into one for the common good. And the infighting within the people can never be good for the nation in the long run. And if the nation gets worse, so also the workers get it worse, of course. And we have good examples in history of this, how the workers are not getting it that great during communist rule. However, nowadays, at least in the Nordic countries, but I guess it is the same in most, if not all, Western countries, the traditional workers, they are living a quite good economical life compared to, for like, say, 100 years ago or something. And this, combined with other factors, have made the red to not care about the workers anymore. These other factors being that the communist rulers have found new interest on how to split the nation. Because instead they have changed their focus to only care about racial foreigners and sexual perverts. Now there are workers, the ones owning the companies, and then there is foreigners and sexual perverts. And the Reds, both the Social Democrats and the Communists, they don't care about anyone except for the foreigners and the perverts. And you can really question how it helps workers to fight for more right for sexual perverts. But at least it is very easy to state that, of course, immigration is very bad for the workers, since the foreigners help dumping the wages, but also since they to a much greater degree do not want or can work at all, and thereby only takes from the society and the commonwealth without giving anything back. So you have a great number of foreigners taking whatever advantage they can from the welfare system, but without contributing to it. So the workers are the one paying for the feast. And also, of course, it is bad for the workers with the greater degree of insecurity coming from raised criminality with foreigners. All in all, I would say it's obviously a big threat to workers with mass immigration. And still, the red parties and organizations seem to want to import the whole third world into the Nordic region. The Nordic resistance movement's most important policy action is to immediately stop the immigration and then as soon as possible start a huge repatriation. And this, I would say, is actually the main workers' right question today. If you are pro-workers, you support this. If you are against workers, you oppose it. And the Social Democrats and the Communists, they do not only oppose this, they actively fight to get even more foreigners here, to open the borders even more. So it's easy to see that they do not care at all about workers. The Workers' Party of the 21st century is the Nordic resistance movement. And then adding to this, also, the Reds have a naive fantasy to make everyone equal. However, the only way to make this possible is by lowering every man to the lowest standard. And it is impossible to make a worthless human being into a fantastic human being. So therefore, everyone must be made into a worthless human being. And this is the only way to accomplish true equality. National Socialism instead is about raising everyone to be the best they can possibly be, but still acknowledge that everyone is different and also embrace this diversity as we know that we complete each other. A lawyer is not automatically a better person than a waitress. But they are different, and they fill different roles and needs in the society, and they are both valuable to the nation as a whole. However, regarding everything in this question, we also have my favorite passage of our political program, Our Path, so I also want to read that part to answer the question once again. And then I take a longer quote here, but I quote, "National Socialism, which the Nordic resistance movement represents, differs vastly from the international and Marxist socialism that communism and social democracy stand for and have brought forth in the Nordic region. Our socialism is nationalistic and is rooted in a united national community, not class conflict. In our society, we will have intellectuals and highly educated, as well as blue-collar workers, those from affluent families and those coming from poorer conditions, the elite of the society, as well as the weak and the vulnerable. And all will be working towards the collective goals of the people. A united national community must replace the materialism and individualism prevalent amongst the people today. What is best for the people must replace liberalism's what is best for me and Marxism's what is best for my societal group. Everybody has a role for the good of the people. A society without mechanics or farmers would be equally as useless as a society without engineers or economists. National Socialism is not about lowering everybody to the same minimum level in the name of equality and fairness, but rather is about recognizing that people are different and capitalizing on each individual's unique capabilities in the best way possible. Simply put, the Nordic resistance movement is striving to achieve a revolutionary transformation of our people's way of thinking by altering several points that, when combined, can achieve this goal. A prerequisite for establishing this united national community is to first dismantle the multi-ethnic society we have today, as a mixing of races and cultures in itself creates smaller societal groups, each with their own vested interests. End quote. So, yeah, now the question has been answered twice with different words.
But natural socialism is often referred to in the media as a right-wing ideology, and labor rights tend to be found in the left-wing spectrum. Do you want to clarify how it is?
That we should be a right-wing movement is perhaps one of the oldest propaganda tricks in the book. And this is to scare away workers from joining us. The ruling elite of today, they definitely acknowledge the power in the working masses, and that we would make a real and direct threat to them if these masses looked at us as a possible alternative. And even more so, the ruling elite, of course, fears the vision of Volksgemeinschaft, where all of the people unites against the ruling elite. So, therefore, besides the Holocaust and some other shitty propaganda tool they use, they also use this propaganda tool, naming us right-wing. So, does this make us left-wing then? I would say at least left-wing would be more accurate than right-wing. But the whole truth is that National Socialism stands way above the old left and right wing scale. We are not right wing, we are not left wing, we are the people's wing. We are not loyal to any class or special interest in society. We oppose both communism and capitalism and fight with every mean possible for our nation's sake. We are loyal to our race, and we are loyal to nature. Both things that stands way above left-wing communist splitting and right-wing capitalist enslaving.
Yes, in our political program, our path, like you mentioned, we also write the following about work. Quote, everybody has both a right and an obligation to employment. Employment is so much more than just earning money, as it also fulfills an individual's social needs and provides a sense of self-worth as a contributing member of society. End quote. Do we want to develop this a little bit?
Yeah, on your work, you get friends and you get updated on what's happening, what people feel and think. You get this social part. But even more so, I believe you get the feeling of being part in a wider context. And at least for Nordic people, I believe that this is a very important part to be able to stay healthy and stay happy. So yes, I do definitely think that having a work and a field to contribute make people happier and less depressed. And therefore, and also as research supports, also less likely to start fleeing from their lives with drugs, porno, or whatever addiction they can find. And for example, Friday evening. Friday evening is holy for every worker, and you would never find any unemployed person getting this feeling that the worker gets from Friday evening. This feeling of freedom and happiness just from an ordinary routine happening every week. I do also believe that people who earn their own money feels more satisfied than people who just gets their money for doing nothing. And also paying taxes actually could feel good if you knew that your tax money actually went to good things, to the society and the people as a whole, and not like today where it goes to a welfare check for immigrants, contributions to so-called developing countries, propaganda, and high salaries and fat parachutes for politicians and banksters. Having a work and these positive things that comes with work is a freedom. It is actually a human right. And it is a human right that we promise to give all people that can contribute somehow. We will provide all healthy people within the Nordic nation employment.
This last thing you said, providing all people with employment, how would that be possible?
It will be made possible through several different changes. To mention a few, we would make sure that our nation was self-sufficient and produced all food and all resources it could possibly need without any import at all. This would mean that a lot of the industry that has moved to foreign countries in the last centuries would be brought back, and also that the farmers could employ much more people since the farms could grow again. Also, we would invest a lot of money into creating a strong military defense force. And this would, of course, also create hundreds of thousands of jobs, maybe millions, with all the services connected to this. So there are some easy questions on how to create a lot of works that are not there today.
Before the next question, I want to go a little bit off topic, but the Swedish listeners and or Norwegian and Danish as well, the term realpolitik actually is the correct term. It seems to be the correct term in English as well. I had to check this out and it seems legit. However, I'm a little bit unsure how it's pronounced in English. And it is originally a German term. So that was a little bit about language history. So now to my question regarding realpolitik. What else do we pursue for concrete and realpolitik issues that would benefit the workers?
We, for example, want to lower the ordinary work week to 30 hours instead of 40 as it is now. We strongly believe that the technical development and a greater number of the people that actually would and could contribute should make this possible without any major problems. And with 2 hours free time every day, the freedom of the workers would be even greater, and society as a whole would make huge earnings if everyone of the people put those extra hours in their family, in their physical training, to educate themselves, to creating art, to conduct research, and so on. We would also like to make huge improvements in the social safety net and, among other things, make both healthcare and dental care free for all Nordic citizens. And huge improvements for the one not being able to work will also be taking place. Everyone that out of age, physical or mental health, could not work anymore, should get welfare to make sure they can have the same wealth and living quality as the ones working. However, I would also like to add that if you out of laziness make the choice not to work or study, and make the choice not to contribute to society, even if you could, then you are and will be recognized as a parasite, and then you should not be taken care of at all. And also, this is actually a good worker policy, that you know as a worker that your tax money won't go to anyone that is not willing to contribute theirself.
The parasites will contribute within the concentration camps, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe, yes.
Yes. Do you have an appeal or request to everyone who is listening now before 1st of May? You could decide how everyone would celebrate the Workers' Feast Day.
Yeah, I would like everyone to celebrate really big this year. And I want them to celebrate by taking action for the white working people somehow. There are a million of ways for you all to follow this wish. The only restriction is your fantasy. Maybe you can hand out flyers that encourage people to fight the system. Maybe you can put up banners with NordicResistanceMovement.org address. Maybe you can bake a huge cake and give to all the white workers at your local factory. Or why not spam all the social medias and forums in the whole web with National Socialist messages? Or simply use the day to find out who is your best local National Socialist organization and send in a membership application to those. By fighting for your race, by fighting for National Socialism, you are truly fighting for the workers' right. And I believe that there are no better way to celebrate the workers than to actually fight for the workers. And if everyone does their part, not just this day, of course, but hey, you got to start somewhere. But if everyone does their part in the fight, in the struggle, then in the future, we can really party and really celebrate 1st of May together on the grave of this treacherous system.
Yeah, and if you do any of these things or something else, please send in an email to us at info@NordicResistanceMovement.org and tell us about it. And so we will be happy to read some of the mails in the next episode.
I hope that we get some mails from you and that you really take this appeal, this wish from me, and make something astonishing on 1st of May. I look forward to hear from you all and see the reports drop in.
Yes, very good. And by that, we will end this episode. So questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes or leadership perspective can also be sent to info@NordicResistanceMovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can read more about us on our webpage, NordicResistanceMovement.org. Next episode will be out on the 23rd of June. See you then. Bye.
Take care, everyone. Goodbye.